Drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
Welcome on in. It's the CDGA Golf Show here on ESPN 1000. Tyler Rocky and Mike Gilligan with you. We talk golf every single Saturday morning right here 9 to 11 a.m. throughout the golf season. And it is officially tour championship time as they are off and running out at Eastlake Golf Club down in Atlanta. And Scottie Scheffler, your leader right now, he started off with the big 10-stroke advantage, but he has played stellar golf as well. He goes 65 on Thursday, 66 yesterday. Colin Morikawa right behind him as well. He is 17 under for the tournament, 66 followed by a 63. So Morikawa playing some stellar golf as well. But it has been a fun close to the season, and no surprise to anybody, but Scottie Scheffler is in commanding control once again as we hit the weekend.
No doubt, Tyler, and good morning. And good morning, everybody in Chicago. And what a day we are having. You throw a few mountains out there, and this is like what it's like in Vail, Colorado. So if you're going to tailgate or play golf, you've got a hell of a day.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it.
But our attention is down in Atlanta, or as what should we call it, Hotlanta, with the way these guys are just firing birdies and shooting some really low scores. Like you mentioned, Colin Morikawa with a 63 that was highlighted with six straight birdies to start the back nine. And I thought he may do something really special, but he ended up parring in.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he is one who started to make up some ground, because for a brief moment there, it looked like Groundhog Day again with Scottie coming back to the top. He already starts with a lead, and after day one had an insurmountable lead, and I was fearful that, as he mentioned, this is sort of a silly event. I thought he was going to make everyone look silly, and he is, but there's a few people, and it's really the guys that are in second and third that have something to say, because once you start getting beyond the three or four players, the rest of the field is basically kind of out of it.
Yeah. It's, and that's the thing, that you lose a little bit of the drama in an event like this, unless some guy catches an absolute heater. Like if we see Morikawa go out, go 64 today, then things get interesting for sure. He was on sub 30 watch on that back nine yesterday.
Oh yes, he was.
But now you look at where he is. Like, he played one of the best rounds he's played in his career on the tour, and he's still four strokes off the lead after playing a tremendous first round.
Yeah.
I mean, he goes 66 followed by the 63, and he's still four shots back because of the starting positions there.
Is that any more demoralizing or what? I mean, how much better can you do? But he has made up a little bit of ground on him in the second round. But still, can he sustain that over the next couple of days? Because last year, to your point, Rory had the heater.
Yeah.
He was the one who came in at the last ditch effort and knocked Scottie out of this thing. So Scottie's record the last 2 years going into the last couple days here is not real strong. So, you know, this is an event that I think either Scottie has a chip on his shoulder, wants to prove to the world and make a final statement to put no thought or any sort of challenge as to why he shouldn't be awarded Player of the Year. This guy is going to, I think, finish strong and finish with an exclamation point to, you know, go about packing it in for the winter and say, guys, we're going to do this again in 2025, and hopefully I'll even come out even better than before.
Yeah. I mean, it has been a great year on the PGA Tour this year. I think you're seeing it right now with the names that are at the top of this leaderboard. And, I mean, even Xander Schauffele. Like, Xander was the one who started closest to Scottie at the beginning of this event, and he shaky round one for him. He goes 70, but then he bounces back with a 64 in round two, and it's just like, whoa, where was this? I mean, if he really had a good round one and maybe went like 67 or so, then he's in this thing. Mm-hmm. But now you get to Saturday, and he's 5 strokes off the lead. Feels a little out of it, and it kind of removes some of the drama. But again, if he goes out and gets you another 64 or 65, you never know.
And he needs help from Scotty now, because yes. That's how
all these guys do.
Well, yeah. They all do, because that's sort of what I'll call the strength, uniqueness, and weakness of how this event is formatted. And it has gone through a few reiterations of what it is. And I think the PGA Tour is trying to come up with a property, an event that they can call their own that resembles a few different sports, called Super Bowl, NASCAR, horse racing, relay racing, you know, and staggered starts and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, it's still golf. And I think as much as you try to make this the perfect end of year event, you know, much like match play, you are open for less than desirable final outcomes, just like in a match play. A match play event, and why the PGA of America went away from it, was because the match could be over 5-4, and
right.
Then you've got 45 minutes of telecast to do nothing, which, and that's not going to appeal to the sponsors. So this format lends itself to that kind of thing happening. Because if you look at Sahith Theegala and Wyndham Clark tied at 4, they're 9 shots back. So if I told you you're 9 back of Scottie Scheffler, I mean, that's going to be kind of like mm-hmm. an uphill battle like right. I've never seen. So you went from 30, and as we stare down the final 2 rounds of the season, for all practical purposes, we're basically down to 2 and maybe Xander. But otherwise, it's just 3. I cannot believe somebody from 9 back is going to do this, unless they have an absolute heater for 2 straight days and Scotty and Xander decide to fall off the face of the earth.
And Colin Morikawa, too.
And Colin Morikawa, yeah, like too.
That it's one of those things, you get to today, and like you said, it's down to 2 or 3 guys at most, and you just, at that point, you're praying that the field falls back. Or that the top dogs fall back to the rest of the field. And with the way that those guys have been playing all year long, I don't know if that's possible. How would you change it? Would you change it?
Yes, I would. How I would change it, I'm not quite sure just yet. But I definitely think that the staggered start, I mean,
you have to stagger it somehow. I just think that the 10, starting Scotty 10 under, is extreme.
Right.
I would chop it in half.
I think I agree. And because I do think, like, for example, when I compare it to, you know, like at the Olympics, and you'd see them run a race where it's a staggered start. Mm-hmm. Well, those lanes are only so wide, and the, you know, track is so long. So they do that to make it equal.
Right.
Well, they're taking what is equal and trying to stagger it and calibrate it so that is 10 shots too much? And I agree with you. I think it is, because look at what happens. We take a 30-man field and immediately, you know, dress it down to just a select few. And if you truly took a step back and looked at who's truly winning this tournament, if you started at level, yeah. Colin is.
Colin, yeah.
He's
running
by
laps.
A couple.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's running away with this thing if this were a real golf tournament. But I do agree with you. I think there has to be some form of, you know, reward to the guy that, you know, has the season, like Scotty and Xander and all of them. And they should have a bit of a staggered start. But could you imagine what it would be like if every single week Scotty Scheffler teed it up at 10 under?
Yeah.
I mean, the betting odds, I mean, it would just be ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so I think because Scotty and Xander are having 2 amazing years, and these two are setting themselves apart from the rest of the field. And I think what Xander did for us this year is prove to us that he is a, you know, all tools are in and all firing. He's the kind of guy that, although he did have a bit of a challenge in that first round, the rest of his game is so solid. That's about as bad as Xander is going to play right now in this stretch run of how good he's playing. He is the only guy right now, I would say Colin this week, but over the last several weeks, months, Xander's the guy that's proven to be the heir apparent to be able to maybe battle Scotty, you know, based on how strong his driving, his irons, his just everything, the putting.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got it all going. So today is a key day for Xander Schauffele. And if he can you know, get this thing going, he's got a shot. But because of this format, if he doesn't have that good around, and let's say Scotty throws down the gauntlet, this thing's over and everyone's tuning over to college football.
And that's the thing, too, is with in the case of Scotty, you start with a two-stroke advantage over the next guy. If you go out and that first day you win head-to-head against him like he did, I mean, he bested Xander by 5 strokes. You have a 7-stroke lead on the guy who's supposed to be on your tail. 7 strokes.
Yeah.
Like, when you have something like that, it's over. And when you've got a guy as dominant as Scotty is, it's definitely over.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, and with Scotty, you know, putting it together now, because it seemed like the last 2 weeks, if I were to compare Scotty's play in the first two playoffs, it's almost like in the NFL, his 2 bye weeks. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was kind of like, yeah, I'm just here to kind of get this thing going. And,
right.
You know, I'm polishing up my game, because guess what's going to happen when we all arrive at Eastlake? Then you're going to see the buff, polished version of Scotty Scheffler. And I think that's what we're about to start seeing. And I wouldn't be surprised if he throws one low one in there. Because last year, if you remember, when he lost to Rory, he shot 73 on the final day. He gave up 7 shots that final day. If he just goes ahead and just continues to shoot 66, 66, this thing's over.
It's over.
It's over. And as a fan of professional golf and of the tour, this is not necessarily what you want to see on Sunday. You're tuning in because you want to see literally a horse race. And I think that's the whole idea behind why they're staggering these things. But to your point, I think it's just too much, especially in a year when you have a dominating guy like Scotty is. And I know, you know, when Tiger was doing his thing, they didn't really have these staggered starts then. And so I think they're now finding that maybe that's a little rich to give the top player in the world that kind of a head start.
Well, especially when it's only a 30-player field, too.
Right.
And I look at Scotty and the 10 strokes there, the reason why I think it should be halved, you should be given some benefit for having a dominant season. No doubt about that. I think Scotty should probably be at 5, Xander and a couple others at 3, and then you get a couple guys in at 2, and then everyone else even to open this thing up. And right now it just feels like there's too many tiers to this. But when you've got such a narrow field of 30, I feel like you can kind of condense it down as opposed to have all of these different flights. You're having 10 different flights go out there.
Right. And instead, when you asked me earlier, how would I change it? I would either go down to 5 or 6, meaning, like, say you take the top 5 and then they get the 5-shot lead. Then you take the next 5 and they get a 4-shot lead. Mm-hmm. So you pack the leaderboard nice and tight.
Yeah.
Then release the hounds. And now let's see what happens. Because right, a lot more starts to enter into your mind when all of a sudden, wait a minute, Scotty's only 2 ahead of me instead of 6? Well, now that's different. And I think from Scotty's perspective, going in with, now I've got everybody within arm's length of me, instead of just all I got to do is put one good round out there and I distance myself from about 20 to 24 of these guys.
Yeah.
And then eventually it just turns into a 3-4 horse race.
So it's a 30-player field. Would you ever consider trimming the field? Because, like, last 10 guys really don't have a chance.
Well, that's only because they start them so far
right
back. And I think what I would do is condense them and say that the guy furthest back is only 5 back,
mm-hmm,
not 10.
Yeah.
Instead of reducing the field. Just because I think we're starting to realize from the corporate partners, from the sponsors, that when you do these signature events and you start shrinking the field, you've now shrunk the amount of entertainment. So the amount of tickets and the prices and the hospitality and all the advertising and everything that they're charging, they're basically saying, we're going to show you less entertainment, but we're going to charge you more. That business model for the long term in corporate America, mm-hmm, is not going to last long. And with the TV ratings also starting to plummet,
yeah,
the PGA Tour had better start opening up their eyes real, real soon, or they could start losing some sponsors. And I know one that's out there that if they walk away, they're going to lose 2 events, and that's Royal Bank of Canada.
Yeah.
And if they lose Harbortown and the Canadian Open, wow. And there's whispers that They only renewed this year, and they were going to take a wait-and-see attitude. And based on what their director of sports marketing has said, they're taking a look at other options just because of this, the situation in the game of professional golf and what it has done.
Right. It's such a murky situation right now. And we'll talk to James Colgan coming up at 10 o'clock and try to clear some of it up. See
what he's hearing
and his thoughts on the playoff format and all that stuff. And we, I don't think, have asked him about his round at Augusta.
No.
Which was and so he,
and St. Andrews
and St. Andrews. So he's had both of those
summer.
What a year for him. And then coming up next, we will talk with Tracy Raul as the 7th annual scholarship invitational is coming up in a couple weeks from now at Jackson Park. So we'll do all that when we come back. And I do want to give a quick shout out to our presenting sponsor, Glenview Park Golf Club. And they've got a fantastic fall special for you here.
I can't believe this. I had to call Ron to make sure that this is in
that
fact
these
correct.
Numbers are right here.
Yeah, because this is unbelievable.
All right, so you can get a foursome for just $199.95. That's right. Foursome.
A foursome.
For $50 a head.
And that includes your cart and sleeve of balls.
How about that?
That's the part I was like, are you kidding me?
So mention the CDGA Golf Show right now and call the golf shop, 847-724-0250. Again, that's 847-724-0250 to book your tee time and experience the best at Glenview Park Golf Club. Again, that is a foursome for just $199.95 at one of the best courses you will find in the area.
Yeah, fall golf, and he's doing it just for the listeners. What a great, I mean, I just couldn't believe it. So I thank Ron up and down sideways.
Yeah. All right, when we come back, we will talk with Tracy coming up next.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app.
CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. The segment brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club, a pure golf experience. We'll talk to Tracy Raul in about 12 minutes from now as she'll bring us everything that's taken place with the Scholarship Invitational down at Jackson Park. Also, James Colgan, our buddy from golf.com, joins at 10 to talk everything that's going on with the PGA Tour, merger, as we wind down here towards the championship at East Lake. You know what's funny? I was at X Golf. What was this? On Wednesday. Wednesday night, I was at X Golf, and I was picking out my course, and I saw East Lake right there. I was like,
you know what?
Why don't I get a little preview before what I see tomorrow?
And then
I was blindsided by the par three on hole two. I was like, oh, this is a nice little ease into the course here. But no, it was a good time. Good time. Love hitting it up at X Golf. And especially like sometimes it was a later night. I think I got in at like 9 o'clock there.
So is it Wrigleyville?
Wrigleyville, yeah. Got in at like 9 o'clock there. And I was like, because all the ranges were closing or close to closing, or it's like, oh, I got to drive all the way up to Des Plaines or something like that. I was like, you know what? I could just go to X Golf right down
the
corner. And then if you're a CBGA member, you get your 10% discount. And that applies to everything.
Yes.
So it's food, beverage, the simulators, all that. So it's a fantastic deal there. All right. So as we are continuing to look at everything else that has sort of transpired, I think looking at these standings, though, for as much as we can give grief to what the format and the way that the staggered starts comes about, I think when you look at these standings, it's kind of a good indicator of, all right, what kind of year have we had on the PGA Tour? If you just look at your leaderboard right now, Scottie Scheffler is your leader by 4 strokes. Then it's Colin Morikawa, Xander Schauffele, Sahith Theegala, Wyndham Clark, Adam Scott, Sam Burns, Tony Finau, Hideki Matsuyama, Ludvig Åberg, and Sungjae Im, Rory, and Taylor Pendrith. Do you think, when I read out the top 10 in ties to you there, that is a good summation of what we've seen on the tour this year?
Pretty much. I think the only one that I might throw in there is a Tommy Fleetwood, because it seems like he shows up but never gets across the finish line. Always has nice finishes, but he's not too much further down the leaderboard. But yeah, I do. I think it's basically a snapshot of the type of season we had. I mean, we've got guys like Sahith Theegala, who's been nothing but impressive all year as a young and up-and-comer, And he's doing just the same here at the final event. So, you know, Wyndham Clark is now finding things again after having a really strong BMW back in his hometown. Good to see JT starting to play some good golf.
Yeah.
Adam Scott, for as old as he may be in relationship to these young guys, it's like he just found the fountain of youth when playoff in the end of the summer came along. And he's playing some really good golf, a little 66, 67 to open things up. So, yes, I do. I feel like this is a pretty good reflection of the type of year that we've had. It's been pretty well dominated. You know, when you consider right up in the first, like, three spots, we've got, you know, the winner of three of the four majors.
Yeah.
So,
interesting with Colin Morikawa. I mean, he's playing great down the stretch here. He's had his ups and downs, had a nice showing at the Open. He's had his moments over the course of the year. But I would think it would be really cool to see him take this from Scotty. I don't think we're going to get there. But he's one of those guys who, we've seen it so many times now, right? Comes out guns a-blazing to start his career. Then wins a couple majors, all that good stuff. Then here come the sponsors. Here come the extra events you have to do for said sponsors. Your profile goes up, and you're taking off the practice range more and more and more, and the practice course more and more and more, and you see the career start to slide a little bit. We've seen it with Spieth. I think we saw it a little bit with Victor Hovland to a degree as well, but he started to bounce back. And I think with a guy like Colin Morikawa, it feels like now we're starting to get to the other side of it, and he's elevating himself. And I think he could be one of those guys that wins a major next year.
I do, too. And I actually think Colin Morikawa is a kind of guy that is going through what I call the second level of maturation on tour. You started out, you got hot, you won a few majors, a couple of tournaments, and now they're all thinking you're going to take over the world. But to your point, distractions, you know, where's the best use of your time, the commitments you've now entered into by signing various sponsorships. Is he coming out of that realizing, you know what, I got to stay true to myself. I got to stay true to my game. And if that means I got to start saying no to things and put things back together so that I can make sure that I can be the best player I can possibly be first and then be an endorsed athlete second, then I think things are going to start to turn around. And if he does turn around and win this, oh boy, Colin Morikawa better be on everybody's radar next year.
Yeah, it's been a fun end of the season for him. On the side of Xander here, I wonder if he might enter into that now. Two-time major champion this year, coming off his best career year. You know, he's finally got the monkey off of his back of the title of being the best player without a major. Now, could the sponsors really come calling for him? And are we going to see him go into the lull? Now, he's not as young as what Colin and Spieth and Hovland were when they kind of started to perk up a little bit. And Hovland never won a major, to be fair. But are we going to see Xander now start to enter into that little bit of a dip next year? Like, listen, no one's going to fault him if he doesn't repeat with two majors next year. But I think if he doesn't win two tournaments next year, whether it's majors or just along the PGA Tour, because he only won the two majors this year. And I say only.
Right.
But he didn't win any other events. He had quite a few top 10s, some top 5s nestled in there as well. But if he doesn't win two tournaments next year overall across the entire season, I think that'd be a little bit of a disappointing year for Xander.
No doubt it would. In fact, if Colin Morikawa has a very strong finish, battles but comes up short, I think next year you're looking at the top three players right there going into next year. If he fades and really puts on a poor showing the next 2 days, I think it's going to stick with him going into next year. And I think it is then going to be those two. But honestly, I think Colin is going to put a lot of pressure on him. It may not be enough, but if he stays the guy that's continually putting pressure today and tomorrow on Scotty, and even if Scotty comes out ahead, I still think Scotty, Colin, and Xander are going to be the big three that we're going to talk about all the way into to the Masters next year. I could see these three carrying the torch now, at least for United States golf.
Yeah. What do you think of Rory? Because this was a pretty steep fall from grace for him. When he goes out, and it felt like this was going to be a big year for him.
Yes.
The choke at the U.S. Open at Pinehurst. I mean, one of the epic collapses that we've seen. Like, I've told you, I didn't watch that fourth round live. I didn't watch that Sunday live. I watched it the next day. And when you're watching something and you know the result of an event, sometimes you're watching and it's like, how the hell does this guy lose?
Yes.
I mean, he had multiple stroke leads, and just it felt like he had finally squeezed the life out of Bryson. And it wasn't like Bryson also, even though he won the event, it wasn't like he was at his sharpest on that back nine either. He had a couple of really clutch shots, but some of the misses that Rory had, Bryson also had on the putting green.
That's right.
And to see Rory where he is right now in a tie for 10th, and not in that circle of the top 3-5 guys right now, this has been a very disappointing year for him.
It has, and I just wonder if Rory is just in his own mind over this year.
Would you say that he needs the offseason more than anybody else in golf right now?
1,000%. He just needs time. Time heals all wounds, and the wound he got at Pinehurst was a big one. Big one, you know, physically to what it did to his game, but more mentally and emotionally, because let's face it, Rory's a top, you know, top first class dude. He walked out of there without saying a word to anyone and just went away for a while. And honestly, I think if you shot him up with a little truth serum, I bet he'd even say he didn't even want to go back to the Scottish into the Open. Yeah. It was only he had to because it just so happens it's on top of him. So yes, I do think he's a guy that is looking forward to just getting away for an extended period of time and reassessing things, you know, for his career and everything else. And how does he go about attacking next year with, you know, more pressure, more eyes, and more people either rooting for him or criticizing him? Yep. And honestly, I think he's at a interesting crossroads of his career, honestly.
All right, we will talk with Tracy Rowell, the president and chairwoman of the Jackson Park Golf Association. That's all coming up next. This segment has been brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our Chicagoland locations today. Let's head on out to the Jersey Mike's hotline. Jersey Mike's a sub above as the 7th annual Scholarship Invitational is coming up on Sunday, September 15th out at Jackson Park. And we bring in now the president and chairwoman of the Jackson Park Golf Association. Tracy Rowell joins us on the CDGA Golf Show. Good morning, Tracy. Thanks for taking some time with us today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Tracy, hey, it's so good to have you on, and I was excited about bringing you on because of all the things that Jackson Park Golf Association is up to. And I know there's a lot of groups out there that say that they're involved in growing the game, and, you know, it's something that we easily say and talk about, but then do we actually do the walk? And I love everything that you champion and get involved with and everything that Jackson Park Golf Association stands for. Can you give our listeners an overview of how and why the Jackson Park Golf Association got started and how old this association truly is?
Yes, I would love to share that as quickly as I can. Jackson Park Golf Association started back in the late 80s by a group of golfers that played and supported Jackson Park. They wanted to see changes and upgrades made to the course.
All right, let's get Tracy on hold.
I think we'll
get back to Tracy in just a second here. But yeah, she was telling us a little bit about the event that's taking place at Jackson Park. Have you attended one
yes.
of these?
Oh, I have. In fact, we'll have a group in this event, and it's one of their largest, biggest fundraisers of the year, and it'll be Sunday, September 15th out at Jackson Park. And it is does so many good things for so many good people. Their vision is basically, they're an inspiration for future, you know, through innovative thinking, investment, and engagement, but utilizing the game of golf. And they have done some amazing things for the community and for the people that make up their community, all the way from those that are learning how to play the game and various demographics and segments inside it, all the way to producing some of the most top-notch players like a Moby Dillard, who played at Florida A&M. And, you know, this whole association championed Moby scholarships and the ability to help champion his young career. So,
all right, we've reconnected with Tracy. So before we lost you there, what were you saying, Tracy?
I was saying that Jackson Park Golf Association started in the 1980s, late 80s. They wanted to have upgrades to Jackson Park course. They also wanted to start a junior program and a caddy program. Fast forward, this year, I'm proud to say, we reinstated the caddy program at South Shore. Looking forward to having more young people learn how to caddy. Looking forward to growing the game for more underrepresented men, women, and notably children. And that's why we have this annual invitational.
I think we're having a tough time connecting here with Tracy. Maybe we'll have to try another time here. But yeah, so the Jackson Park Invitational taking place, the 7th Annual Scholarship Invitational taking place at Jackson Park on Sunday, September 15th.
Yeah, and you know, and it's interesting, and I think what she was trying to get at is the various programs that they get involved with. Everything from the WGA and getting caddies, introducing these kids down in the inner city to what golf is all about. And if even if they don't play, they can caddy. They can get jobs within golf. Really, overall, the Jackson Park Golf Association is an unbelievable asset that is doing nothing but great things for our community and for the young men and women to expose them to other opportunities in life and all the things that golf can bring along with it. Some may not make it as a player, but they might enjoy caddying. And the next thing you know, they're getting a scholarship to a major university when they didn't think going to college was even a remote possibility.
Well, the other thing about caddying, too, and I'd love to hear from some people. We've never, like, asked for caddy stories on here. Maybe we should do that.
We should do that.
After we talk to James.
But they got to be PG-rated. I mean, we're on the
Maybe we could do a little PG-13. But, like, caddying is one of the best networking tools that you can have as a young young kid. Like, I know plenty of people who they've had members of these different clubs that they caddied at or anybody that they would meet along the golf course from caddying. They'd write their college recommendation letters. And it's just you establish a rapport with people, and it's a great networking tool. And you never know how it's going to help you along the way.
Well, it's funny you even bring this up. When we had to do the two Sunday shows, it gave me my first opportunity to play golf on a Saturday. And I ran into a young man at White Eagle Country Club who's going for an Evan Scholarship himself. And boy, as I got to know this young gentleman, I could tell he was uniquely different. And I got to know this guy over the course of basically 4.5 hours. And he asked me, he goes, would you mind helping me with a letter? So I drafted up a letter on his behalf. Here is a kid who's ready to change the world, but his father is a fireman, single dad. They're stretched and they've got a big family. And, you know, there's no mother in the picture. So he's gone through amazing health issues, but his resiliency. And he fell in love with caddying. He doesn't play. He just loves to caddy.
Yeah.
And he is such a great dude. And I hope that he wins. I mean, they'll know in October. But just to see the greater good that the WGA does day in, day out. But it has trickled down all the way to Jackson Park. So there's an opportunity for kids down at Jackson Park, South Shore Club, to also go to college. And the Jackson Park Golf Association makes these kinds of opportunities available. And it's just really, for me, a great thing to see, how the game of golf is you know, transforming and changing lives. And that's the beauty of the game of golf.
Yeah. All right, real quick, before we get back to talking about some things that are taking place on the PGA Tour, don't forget, our presenting sponsor, Glenview Park Golf Club, has this amazing special that you got to take advantage of. A foursome at Glenview Park for $199.95. All you got to do, call the golf shop right now, 847-724-0250, 847-724-0250. Mention the CDGA Golf Show, and you will also get a dozen golf balls. And this price includes a cart as well. So you're going to get 18 holes of fantastic golf for you and three friends, a cart, and a sleeve of a dozen golf balls. So 847-724-0250 to play one of the best courses in the area.
And I can promise you the conditioning will be superb because of Todd Vermillion and his staff up there. But I still can't believe Ron has done this for our listeners. But thank you, Ron Cassidy, up at Glenview Park.
$50 ahead, one of the best. So experience the best at Glenview Park Golf Club. All right, when we come back, we'll get back to what's going on the FedEx Cup Championship as they're down at Eastlake right now and the charge for the final couple of rounds of the season. I can't believe we're already here.
I know. It's unbelievable. Do you know this is our 28th show of the season already?
Wow.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Who's counting, right?
I don't.
All right. We'll be right back. This segment brought to you by Coghill Golf and Country Club, pure golf experience.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our Chicagoland locations today. This segment brought to you by our friends over at Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin. As the Tour Championship continues to roll along, we'll talk with James Colgan about 8 minutes from now, get his thoughts on what he's seen from the playoff and all of the changes that have been made and what changes could be coming to the golf world as well. And I want to pick his brain on the Ryder Cup as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because Bethpage Black, of course, that's very near and dear to his heart. He's played it many a time out there, and I'm sure he's excited for what's to come with the Ryder Cup returning to American soil next year. But you were talking a little bit to me in the break about Eastlake, where the Tour Championship is taking place down in Atlanta right now. And you have played Eastlake a number of times, but you have not played the Eastlake that we're seeing right now on the course.
No, it's been interesting for me to watch this because they did something that I think is truly remarkable. They actually did a renovation between the time the last putt dropped and the first tee ball was hit, and it was a $30 million renovation. This just wasn't, let's tweak a few bunkers, fix a drain over here, and, you know, make this area a little bit smoother, or, you know, the mounds a little bit, you know, less steep. This was a major overhaul. And, you know, the course designer, Andrew Green, who I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is also going to be doing some work at Olympia Fields, was the man in charge. And the story and how he went about doing this is absolutely incredible. They were discussing how they wanted to take this course back to the time when Donald Ross designed it and made it what it was initially. And what happened was back in the early 1900s, after he designed it, you know, we had the Great Depression, we had the World War. And what happened was Andrew came across a 1949 topo map of the property. And when they unrolled it, they said the best way to describe how clear and how much clarity there was in this, they said it almost was like high definition. So what they were able to do is to take this topo map, and then they found ground photographs and images of right after the golf course opened. So Andrew was able to take the topo and those pictures and be able to restore all the areas that were lost due to the Depression and the Great War, and actually then take into account technology, because the apex of our shots now are extraordinarily higher than ever before, especially back in 1913 when Donald Ross with a bunch of hickory sticks. So he put all of that into a think tank and came up with the canvas that they're playing today and did it in less than 12 months. That is absolutely a miracle. But I guess that's what $30 million can buy you these days. But from my perspective, the golf course looks relatively similar, I guess, on certain levels, but completely different on others. There's some holes that are just completely different. And I can see, obviously, a lot of the holes have remained somewhat the same. But the amount of trees that have been taken out is incredible. And that seems to be the new thing with the latest in golf course, you know, redesign, mm-hmm. renovations and the whatnot. It's still a stern test, but obviously when Andrew Green went into doing this, he had to make a quality golf course that was for the everyday player, but also one that can, you know, measure up and hold up against the greatest players in the world. So Donald Ross always said the test of a great golf course is your ability to test the first-class player as well as the everyday. Yeah. And I think there are holes to which the landing areas are much more generous for the members, but where the tour players are landing them this week, you're going to notice that they've narrowed up. So that's the biggest thing that I've noticed is the landing areas are bigger for the members, but where these players and the best players in the world are driving it, it's a lot more difficult. There are much more penalty areas, such as bunkering and you know, water aligning the sides and whatnot. So he did a masterful job bringing this thing back to what it was when it was originally built in 1913.
Well, that's the fascinating part, too. Only took a year.
I know. And normally, in talking to experts across the field, they said this is at least an 18-month to probably 24-month project, especially with what Mother Nature throws you or doesn't throw you.
Yeah.
Obviously, having sort of the climate that they have down there, they can grow grass a heck of a lot faster than we can up here. But at the same time, it's still quite a feat to be able to get that done and be able to put this tour championship on the calendar last year, knowing that this all the grass is going to disappear. It's going to be gone. There are going to be bulldozers. And then eventually this thing's going to be put back together and be just like a carpet of turf. And that's what it is. It's incredible.
Yeah. Then, whipping it up and just having it in championship tournament quality.
Oh, yeah.
As well. Like, not only expediting from a two-year to a year-and-a-half process down to 1 year, but
yeah,
for it to be ready to host the tour championship.
And not only what they've done to the golf course, but what they've also done to the neighborhood around there. Because there was a time that I remember going down there, and honestly, you would have to make sure your doors were locked and your windows were rolled up, because it wasn't necessarily in the strongest part of town. But what they've been able to do through all of their efforts and fundraising and really taking East Lake, not only the golf course, but the community, and really rehabilitating it, it is now a wonderful place to go. It's cool.
When we come back, we will talk with James Colgan, golf.com. He'll give us all the latest of what he's seen down at East Lake and also some Ryder Cup stuff and more. So all that's coming up next. This segment brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of Bowes Creek Country Club and the Highlands of Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.